Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s. And each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Damon, Ratto, and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome, welcome. Steve Kerr joins us in about 13 minutes. We're really looking forward to saying hello to him. Obviously, the final homestand of the year, the final 10 games, the final 10 days, pardon me, 10 days of the NBA's regular season are upon us. And we're going to have ourselves play-ins, playoffs, and it looks like the Warriors are absolutely going to be a part of it. Steve Kerr comes up at 5 o'clock here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky. No Kolsky today. It is Ray. It is I. We were just asked, you know, what happened to the great press conferences? The Allen Iverson press conference certainly was a great one. Today is the anniversary of it. Certainly sounds a little different knowing some things we know now that didn't know exactly then. The Herm Edwards play to win the game press conference was certainly a good one. The Denny Green, you want to crown him press conference. The, obviously one of the most tired press conference sound bites ever was Jim Mora's. And playoffs, you know, that was overly done.
You mean overly done in terms of shown too often?
Yes. Yeah. It became the song that you officially liked, but then you heard it one too many times and you got sick of it.
Yeah, I mean, but that's what was out of his control. But he had great press conferences.
Oh,
that was, that was not the only
playoffs
for him.
Yeah. No. Oh. Look, that's the one that got put on the repeat, the shuffle. But Jim Mora was one of those guys who had just been around the game so long he didn't care what he said anymore, and he was just going to give it to you straight. He was good. It was a fun, smart guy. Locally. Just, you know, kind of talking about it during the commercial break with the studio. Here's the press conference that over the last few years stood out locally above all others.
Yes, I can tell.
Yeah. No, Nash, this is you said you had it ready to go. That's oh, they're well, then play one of them.
Who are you?
That's right.
I'm done.
There he is.
Yeah, you grow up. Kevin, I just don't trust none of y'all.
Kevin,
no, you don't care about that.
Kevin Durant's Ethan Sherwood Strauss presser. That was a nice little slice of awkward. I'll tell you what, another one you want from what got weird around here press conference, the Mike Singletary yelling at Vernon Davis, taking his pants off in the locker room at halftime. Like that was a new, that was a weird one too.
That was a special moment. Yeah, no, the art of the press conference is dying, if not dead, because it's now been stage managed. And it's not the PR guys who stage manage them. They get told by general managers and owners, you said, make this clean so I don't have to explain anything.
Right. The real stage managing is where does the Gatorade bottle go in the TV shot?
Yeah.
And is the corporate sponsor and the synergy of the logo on full display on the LED screen behind me?
Yeah. Who hung the backdrop?
Yeah. Someone's like, Google Jim Mora diddly poo. Oh, his diddly poo press conference is also fantastic. Yeah. Good times. Good times. The Jim Tom Sula fart at the press conference. Yeah, that was a good one, too. That was a good one. There was a little slip.
Hey, do we know absolutely that it was him?
It had to have been.
Well, I mean, no.
It had to. Look at it this way. What in any press conference setting did he get right enough to where you could say, well, he's not responsible for the thing that went very wrong, too? Like, it was just, it was,
It never worked, so why would we assume he wouldn't be guilty of that as well?
Well, a lot of examples in football history of good quarterbacks.
There it is.
Okay, but the way that room is set up, they have microphones hanging from the ceiling over the gallery. So
right, but then if that were the case, how many times do you think like Matt Maiocco let one rip during a presser, and we've never heard it?
Oh, he's unusually gassy.
Well, I'm just saying, between Maiocco, Killian, who else is down there covering that team?
Oh, Barrett, there's dozens of people.
Cam Inman's a gassy guy if there ever was one.
Oh, I mean, he's made entirely of methane.
We would have heard if it had been the hoi polloi asking the questions being picked up on the Rudy Tooty front, we would have heard it more than just in that one moment.
Well, the fact that we've only picked it up this one time is not the fault of the audience. I mean, you know, it's... Tom Sula is an easy target, but he's one of 25 people in there, and everybody's could be heard. I mean, because of the way they do that. I mean, they don't have a pass-around microphone thing. You just speak up, and it gets picked up. So,
right, the
all
choice
I'm saying
between
is,
printing the truth or the legend is no choice at all. You go with the legend. That was Tom Sula.
And you go with the legend. I want proof.
Hey, whoever smelt it, dealt it. That's the proof I can
Well,
offer.
Today it's you, then.
Ah. Are you denying
or
it?
Or Nash.
If you denied it, you supplied it. I mean, I do know there are some rules that are well established on this front that a lot of people say they're unwritten rules. I don't know if anyone ever wrote these down, but we all know them. We all know them. Someone is like, what about the Dan Campbell presser? Yeah, the biting knees off, the Detroit Lions. Yeah, they are absolutely looking for agresivo press conference out of their head coach.
As far as that
goes. We're going to bite a kneecap off. We're going to take your other kneecap.
I mean, as far as that goes, you know, the minimalist approach, too. I mean, we're on to Cincinnati. That's played as often as anything, including practice.
Oh, look, I say I'm on to Cincinnati in contexts where the people who I'm talking to, I know for a fact, don't even get what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons why your wife is getting fed up with you.
Many reasons.
You know, it's, you know, dinner's over and, well, you want to go watch TV? No, we're on to Cincinnati. You're getting a skillet upside the head. And frankly, I would testify on her behalf at the trial if that's how that went.
Oh, look, there's going to be a lot of people showing up on her side of the jury box. If it's like the wedding, you know, one side is the groom's side, the other side is the bride's side, there's going to be more people on the bride's side at that trial.
Well, that's really more sort of plaintiff defendant.
What about the Rasheed Wallace, both teams played hard? Yeah, that was a good one, too.
Both teams just played hard tonight. Both teams played hard, left it all out there.
Yeah, he was basically Marshawn Lynch's father.
Oh, that's
in the
right.
You know, I'm just here so I don't get fined.
Yeah, you know what? Here's the thing: the reason why Marshawn got that one wrong, as much as it helped build the brand that he has enjoyed so much brand loyalty towards, when you're in a Super Bowl, that's not just a microphone in your face. It's the single largest microphone that'll ever be put in your face in your entire life. Like, you're going to have to give presidential press conferences to have more attention to the words that you're uttering into a microphone than in a Super Bowl setting for any athlete. And the fact that instead of, if you didn't want to talk football, that's fine. Like, use that moment to illuminate the charities that are most important to you. Like, there is so much amplification of good messaging that could happen in that moment to just be like, yeah, I'm all about that action, boss. And that's all you got to say is that was what a wasted opportunity that was from a guy who's got a bigger conscience.
Except that he knows that nobody's going to use that part. They're going to use the football stuff. Because I've been to more of those, you know, Super Bowl Tuesday pressers than I care to count. And
here's the thing. They use it all now, Ray. They don't pick and choose. They use it all.
Well, no, they don't.
They got a 24-hour news cycle to fill.
Okay, but we're talking now about 10 years ago, and they didn't use it all then. And the fact is, the Super Bowl Tuesday was a dog and pony show well before then.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So, but, I mean, the Super Bowl doesn't get to claim any kind of special dignity because
they're
about daily degradation on a galactic scale.
Right. If we're going to allow
what they deserve was Marshawn Lynch dropping trowel right there and going, here's your presser. Have a great day.
Well, I was saying, you're losing an awful lot of dignity in your media moment when you're allowing the person asking the question to wear a wooden barrel held on by suspenders. And that's exactly what that day turned into.
Yeah. The dignity of the Super Bowl is basically the dignity of a Lucy skit.
I tell you what, Ray, I got to see the way it was, the way it might have been, and the way it was ruined, because I got to go to the Super Bowl in New Orleans that was the last ever Super Bowl with a scant amount of media integrity put on it, and scant is the key word there. And then the very next year in Arizona, it was a disaster. That's when Barrel Man showed up, and you had, you know, Telemundo weather girls wearing the tightest skirts possible there just to wear the tight skirt. And they started selling tickets to media night for people to come on in. They started selling tickets to media row, which ruined that. I mean, I at least got one. I don't know how many you saw that had integrity to them, but I saw one before the whole thing was just sold to the highest bidder.
Well, that was the last phase of that, but you know, the idiot in the costume, you know, that was that wall had already been broken, and the scantily clad weather girl, that had been done before. I mean, it literally became not about the players. It became about the people in the gallery.
Right, it's media
night. And the one thing that I learned in the years that I did it was never go to a podium.
Right.
Don't do it. Go find the people you want to talk to about the thing you want to talk about, because they all have to be there. And for the most part, they're grateful not to be part of the dog and pony.
Right. Do you ever one of my best
interviews ever was with Vic Fangio while he was still with the 49ers, talking about whether he would ever get a chance to be a head coach. You know, you're not going to get that, you know, if you're wearing a light up fez.
Right.
You know, you have to walk up into the stands and sit down backwards on a stadium seat to get stuff like that. If you're willing to work away from the crowd, you could get stuff. But the NFL wanted the crowd. And they didn't want people talking about serious stuff, because for them, it's only a show. They're only putting on football games out of obligation. If they could figure out a way to do this without ever having a game, they would absolutely do it, because they couldn't give less of a damn.
And on that note, let me welcome everybody to their 5 o'clock hour on a Friday afternoon.
You're listening to 95.7 The Game. KGMZ FM and HD1 in San Francisco. It's an Odyssey station.
Let us also welcome Steve Kerr, head coach of the Golden State Warriors, who is brought to us by Harris Hoisting. Steve, not only welcome back to the show, welcome back to the Bay, and you don't have to go anywhere for quite some time. The final 6-game homestand, well, 5 now, is upon us, and I don't know if you're looking at this as a finish line that you made it to, but congratulations. It feels like you're approaching the finish line.
It really does, Damon, and obviously great to be home. I mean, the last few weeks were really rough with all the travel, so great to be back. I think all of our guys are a little tired, but it's a good way to finish. You know, all these home games, we're going to get plenty of rest, and we should be ready to roll.
Yeah, do you mind if I ask you before we get into the nuts and bolts of your team, how's Damian Lee feeling today?
Well, he's feeling better. He's had a rough go. I thought it was great that he really, you know, shared all of his experiences yesterday with the media, and it's been a rough go, and it was shocking, obviously, given that he'd had the vaccine already and still got COVID. I mean, that's as he explained it, you know, there are about 6,000 cases nationwide. They call them breakthrough cases, where, you know, vaccinated people get COVID. 6,000 out of about 80 million. So it's kind of a needle in the haystack. But when you're that person, that's no fun, obviously. And he's doing okay, but he hasn't been able to do any conditioning. He's not allowed to get on the court yet. So this is really quite a blow for him.
given that the news hit you the way it did it reframe basketball in COVID America for you in a way that, okay, we're vaccinated, we're kind of in the clear, except not necessarily? Are you looking at that whole dynamic a little differently because of this?
Yeah, but that's why it was also good to learn, because as soon as he tested positive, we all assumed, you know, this has got to be a false positive. So now that everything is unfolded and we've learned, you know, that there are these breakthrough cases, more than anything, it's our continued education on COVID. And, main thing is we're just happy that that Damian is feeling better and you know, on the right side of things again. But it seems to have been that kind of year for everybody, where it's just, you know, if it's not one thing, it's another.
Again, since we're talking about Damian Lee having a tassel with COVID-19, I think I also need to let you know that Steve has another sponsor attached to his interview, which is the County of Santa Clara, which right now is allowing you to book a COVID-19 vaccine. Visit sccfreevax.org or call 211 for all the information that you would need. Steve Kerr, nice enough to join us here. And, every single team in the NBA likes to present that they really care an awful lot about their players. And I think that when you watch the way the Warriors treat their players, you can see the teams that are just trying to present this and teams that really do. Steve, I've always thought that you care an awful lot about your players. You've never given us a reason to doubt that. And on that note, how happy are you when you see a player reach a level of success to where now you're offering a full NBA contract? Congratulations to Juan Toscano-Anderson. Kid, you made it.
Yeah, fantastic story. You know, 28 years old, he's bounced around the entire world playing basketball. And I think our fans love him. I know we love him as a coaching staff. The guy just, he gets it. He plays with great energy. He's smart. He's tough. He's improved his skill now as a passer and a shooter to the point where, you know, he's really making a lot of plays out there for us. And he's one of those guys, you know, when a guy knows how to play and he can guard multiple spots, he can play in any combination. And that's his real value to our team is, you know, he's not dependent on, you know, on a certain combination. He, in pretty much every case, he makes whatever combination he's with better.
So is this one of those moments where, you know, the kid who's the walk-on the football team finds out that he gets full scholarship? Do you get the pleasure of telling this to Juan Toscano-Anderson? Congratulations, you got a full-on NBA contract now. Is that what Bob Myers does? Does Bob call his agent? He tells him. Who gets to break the great news?
Well, this has been an ongoing negotiation, and I don't think anything is even official yet. So we always wait until everything is official, but we had a similar situation last year where Damian Lee signed a contract after, you know, being in the G League and signing 10-day contracts and two ways and all that stuff. And that was a really fun moment. And Mike Mulder as well. So we've been through this, a few times, and they're always great moments for individual players, but also for teams, because in pretty much every case, these guys are beloved by their teammates because of how hard they've had to work to, you know, get where they wanted to go.
A couple of weeks ago, we asked about bringing in someone else to fill empty roster spots, and you said, well, no one really understands what we do. It's too late to join us now. Well, who says you can't go home again? Jordan Bell, who looks like he is going to be back as you guys wrap up your year. Jordan Bell back in the locker room. What's that going to mean to you?
Well, unfortunately, I'm not allowed to comment on that because it's not official yet. And so I can't.
Boy, I tell you, Shams is really screwing up our interviews by breaking all these news items.
Well, that's what he does. He knows stuff before we do.
Fair enough.
So how do you use this mythical player that doesn't exist yet? How many crypto minutes does he get? And how many faux points and rebounds are you expecting him to get once he materializes from the ethereal plane from which he resides?
Is this a mythical interview?
Oh, God, you wish it was.
Yeah, well, this is going to be the topic of next week's show. All right.
Oh, well, will he become corporeal by then?
We'll talk about it 2 weeks from now. How's that?
Okay.
The more fancy language you use, he keeps on pushing it back, Ray. So let's get back to English.
Well,
I don't even know what you're saying.
Oh, you went to Arizona. If you'd gone to ASU, I would have dumbed it down for you.
Thank you for the compliment.
Yeah.
I think.
A couple of weeks ago, not only your playoff position, but pretty much the entire bottom half of the Western Conference looked much different than it does now. As you're looking at it, now that it looks like you're in, you know, New Orleans is now, you know, Zion Williamson is out. It looks like it's starting to congeal in ways that nobody figured. Are you starting to think about potential matchups, or does that break the code?
Well, it breaks the code a little bit because there's still, you know, a lot that can happen. And, you know, it's if we take care of business, then we can put ourselves in the best possible spot, which would be, you know, seventh or eighth, more likely eighth, given where the seventh team is right now. It would take almost a miracle to get there, but that's the whole focus, is getting to that spot where we would only have to win one out of two instead of two out of two. So that's a pretty big deal, and that's our focus, much more so than matchups.
There's an awful lot of people who are just holding their breath, thinking about what a play-in between the Warriors and Lakers would look like. Is this something that you've already started thinking about, Steve?
Only in the last day or two. You know, I mean, it's over, you know, every week everything changes. You know, Portland had lost like five or six in a row, and we're heading out on this brutal East Coast trip, and looks like for sure they're going to drop. And then they win four in a row against great teams. And then, of course, you know, LeBron and AD come back and then get injured again. And so, you know, it's only been the last couple of days that I thought, wow, the Lakers actually could drop to seventh. But it's definitely a possibility at this point. Big game tonight with the Lakers in Portland.
No doubt about it. They're all big from here on out. And you got five games left at Chase. This is the first time ever, I believe, the Warriors have wrapped up a year with six consecutive home games. And in the history of, well, it's never happened, but it's happening this year. Finally, you're the benefit of good timing for the first time all year.
Well, I think probably every team has complaints this year. I mean, nobody's really gotten much of a break with anything. But this is very helpful because I know, you know, teams like San Antonio and Memphis who were battling, you know, they both had, I think, like week-long breaks during the season because of COVID, where their games got canceled and rescheduled for late in the season. And both of them are now playing really condensed schedules. And you know, while our travel schedule hasn't been great over the recent weeks, at least we're getting days off in between games and able to kind of recharge. So it does feel like we've gotten a break schedule-wise recently.
Given the fact that you are closing at home, can you sort of encapsulate now what the new world order of home court advantage is in sort of COVID America? I mean, how much less of an advantage is it now, and in what ways do you see that it's less of an advantage?
Well, the big thing is just the lack of fans, you know. Normally in a playoff game, you know, you go on the road and the atmosphere is electric, and you know, the home crowd gives its team, I think, a little better chance to win just with the noise and the intimidation factor, and who knows, human nature. Maybe the refs tend to give the home team a call here and there, and it's just harder to win you know, on the road in the playoffs. So without fans, that dynamic changes. Now, the advantage is still yours that you don't have to travel. So I still think it matters to be at home, but more so just from a rest and recovery standpoint.
Steve, I know that you've talked about Kelly Oubre in pretty much nothing but glowing terms since he joined the team. But absence sometimes makes the heart grow fonder, or when someone leaves, you start to understand their real value in their absence. Have you learned anything more about Kelly Oubre Jr. since he had to shut it down? And I don't know if he's going to be coming back at any point in time this year. Maybe you can give us an update on how he's feeling.
Well, I don't think I learned anything new, Damon. I mean, you know, the fact is Kelly is one of our most athletic players. He's got great size on the wing. He can play multiple spots. So we miss all of that. There's no question. And, you know, his injury has been just really unfortunate for him, obviously, and for us. And but it's just part of the deal. So you just absorb it and you keep going. And the good thing is we've had guys really step up, you know, between Juan and Mike Mulder playing well. Kent Bazemore in the starting lineup has been excellent, brings a, you know, great competitive spirit and, you know, ball pressure defensively. So we're getting really good contributions from guys, but we definitely miss Kelly.
Are you, you were talking about how tired guys were on the road. Was there ever a point where you really started to worry about whether they'd be able to recharge once they got home? I mean, was the road trip that grueling that you had sort of a greater sense of trepidation about where you are now geographically than maybe ever before?
No. I think, you know, coming off that previous trip, you know, a couple of weeks ago when we came back from Washington, D.C., after losing that fourth quarter lead, that's when it just felt like we were completely out of gas. And that's when I decided to not have practice for 4 or 5 days and just have the guys show up for games. And I think, you know, when you can get a stretch like that where it's not too taxing, but most importantly, you're home in your own bed with your family, eating, you know, a home-cooked meal, getting to sleep in a little bit, a few days of that will recharge the battery, and that's exactly what happened. And so I feel pretty good about where our guys are right now. I thought, you know, we were a little sluggish last night, a little tired, maybe some heavy legs, but after a day off today, no shoot around tomorrow morning, I think we'll be ready to go tomorrow night.
Pretty big back-to-back with a step up in competition from Oklahoma City when Phoenix and Utah get here Monday, Tuesday next week. Have you already started looking ahead, with all due respect to Oklahoma City?
Well, you know, we always have our advanced scout, Scott Vaughn, doing a lot of legwork on upcoming opponents, and then each assistant coach is assigned different opponents to cover. And so we're already, you know, covering our bases with Phoenix and Utah and, you know, getting those game plans ready. We just don't share them with the players until that day because we don't want them looking ahead. So
would you like to share them with us?
No, definitely not. But we're much more interested in taking care of business tomorrow against Oklahoma City. And if we can do that, then we've put ourselves in a pretty good spot with four games left. And obviously, as you said, you know, some good teams coming in.
Given the fact that it seems like teams are not as focused on seeding as normal, does it matter or not matter that the Suns and Jazz are right next to each other at the top of the conference? And if it doesn't matter that much, is that a benefit to you?
No, it definitely matters. It would be a benefit to us if either Phoenix or Utah, you know, were 5 games ahead in the standings and looking to rest people and maybe not very motivated. But that's not the case. They both want the one seed. They're both trying to get, you know, playoff ready. They're going to be playing their guys. They're going to be ready to go. So, you know, that makes winning the game tougher for us. But, you know, the flip side of that is with the playoffs coming up, we got to be sharp. And so maybe it's best, you know, getting the other team's best shot.
Steve, 19 years ago today was the Allen Iverson, we talking about practice press conference, which I have, you know, always played that sound because it's just great sound on the radio. I had no idea, though, that guy was going through like a personal tragedy and the loss of a friend. And boy, it really kind of reframes the entire day as I hear it now. What did you think of Allen Iverson as a player, that moment, how it was exploited? I think by him at times, against him at times. It was he was such an extraordinary talent and a player, and obviously a contemporary of yours. What do you think of Allen Iverson and that moment unfairly defining a Hall of Fame player?
I remember that moment well. I had just finished my 14th season in Portland, and I was in the Atlanta studios for TNT during the playoffs. And you know how they always have a guest player during the playoffs on the set, and so I was that guest guy, and that was the day that comment came out, and it was it was sort of amazing, you know, just how honest and forthright he was, particularly with Larry Brown as his coach, you know, the ultimate detail coach, the ultimate practice coach. So it was a fascinating moment. And I know we dissected it that night on the TNT set. For me, you know, looking back, I love Iverson. I love his passion. I love his energy. I love just his will. I think in many ways he was a lot like Russell Westbrook, you know, where maybe he's not everybody's cup of tea. Maybe, you know, you don't love certain aspects of his game. But you just have to admire the ferocious athleticism and desire that's apparent, you know, every single night, and that's what I loved about AI.
Do you think, in some way, that press conference, or at least the part of the press conference that everybody focuses on, the we're talking about practice part, do you think that in some ways sort of reframed for the next generation of coaches the idea about what's important between games and what's now negotiable?
I don't know. I'm sure it played a part in the shift, you know, in mindset. But there's no way it can ever be one comment or one interview. I think you know, things change generationally with time and with, you know, lots and lots of different factors being involved. And so it probably played a role in kind of the transition into the more modern NBA style of, you know, fewer practices, more rest, that sort of thing. But I don't think it was like the tipping point or anything.
A question came up on Twitter, and this is where we'll wrap up today. We thank you for your time, as always, Steve. A question came up on Twitter not too long ago. If you could go with a time machine and bring a player from another era into today's NBA, who would have a different career just based on the proliferation of the three-point shot? There was a lot of Šarūnas Marcelonis. It's too bad he can't come back and play modern basketball. Peja Stojaković could have had a completely different career. The answer I had was you. How different would your career be with teams saying, we can shoot 43s tonight? Not 43s this week is the world you used to live in. 43s tonight. Is Steve Kerr a first ballot Hall of Famer?
First of all, you're delusional. But secondly, no, I think about this sometimes in terms of, you know, if I were playing today, how would I fare? And I really do think it's all dependent on which side of the floor you're talking about. Because on one hand, it really helped me playing defense in the 90s when there wasn't as much court to cover and teams didn't just pick out somebody and put him in high pick and roll over and over again, because that's what teams would do to me now. I mean, if we played against James Harden, they would just call me up in a pick and roll and I'd have no chance. Whereas, you know, 20 years ago, I'm just part of 10 guys in a much smaller radius and there's much more help and, you know, much more low post play, where my job as a guard was, you know, helping out or double teaming a big or making a rotation. So defensively, I think the game has never been harder, never been more difficult than it is today. the flip side of that is, I'd be shooting 10 threes a game instead of three or four. And that is really appealing. There's some give and take there.
What's your career scoring average under today's rules?
Well, maybe lower than it was because coaches wouldn't have faith in my defense. So I wouldn't just play.
Well, you did come from an era where defense was not negotiable. I'll give you that much. But, Steve, I think you're also selling yourself a little short. Steve Kerr shooting 300 threes in an NBA season is a much different player than the guy I watched knock down shots to win NBA titles. So it was good talking to you, Steve. I think I believe in you more than you do, or I believe in the memory of you more than you do.
That sounds pretty accurate.
Steve, thank you very, very much. Enjoy the rest of this week and your final homestand, and we can't wait to see what you guys have in a play-in, a postseason for us. We're leaning forward. Thank you very much.
Sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Thank you very much. Steve Kerr here on 95.7 The Game, brought to you by Harris Hoisting. Level up, learn more at harrishoisting.com. And again, the County of Santa Clara. I don't think we've ever had anyone sponsored by a county before. Santa Clara wants you to know that you can book a COVID-19 vaccine now. Visit sccfreevax.org, sccfreevax.org, or call 211 for details. Steve wasn't out there slapping the floor playing defense, but can you imagine a guy who is nothing short of one of the greatest three-point shooters of all time being able to shoot 15 more of those a night almost, Ray?
Here's the thing. He'd still have to fight for a shot, because if everybody had the green light the way they have the green light now, he might not still get all the shots he should get just because, you know, the three is that prevalent. I mean, I don't know how many players in the NBA. It would be an interesting thought experiment. What percentage of NBA players are told never to shoot a three under any circumstances? I'll bet it's around 10%. And because of that, I think, you know, while it seems logical for him to get a ton more threes, I don't know that the game is that forgiving of anybody anymore. That there are only a few guys who get, you know, get a green light, not only from their coach, but from their fellow teammates. I mean, and Curry is the outlier there. But if you go through any week of box scores, you see a lot of guys taking 10 and 12. So I think in that atmosphere, he'd have a hard time once he passed the ball to get it back.
Look, you might be right. If everyone gets to shoot more threes, that might have meant, but to me, this is where a coach comes in and says, hey, you, I don't mean threes for you. I mean threes for that guy. A guy who I can measure and say he's one of the most accurate three-point shooters in the history of the sport, up to his time in the sport. And that's where a coach says, less of you, more of him, and that's why I'm the coach.
Well, I mean, I'm just looking at, you know, Washington gave Raul Neto 7 threes last night. And Davis Bertans had 8. Fred VanVleet had 12. Gary Trent had 10. These are not unusual numbers anymore.
No.
And I think I think there's no such thing as a green light anymore. I think there's a red light for a few guys and a pretty much a green light for everybody else. Maybe not by design, but just by sort of sheer will. It's just, I'm open, I'm taking it.
Unless you're Ben Simmons.
Yeah, and right. He chooses not to. I mean, that's a him choice. I mean, I'm relatively certain that Doc Rivers would say, will you take a three now and then for me? And Ben Simmons looked at him and said, that's somebody else's job.
Yeah, that ain't me. Yeah.
Sorry, wrong window.
Yeah, wrong guy. How about this? And this is, by the way, I want to make sure I get it all right here. This was a stat that would have been 100% dead on accurate if I had given it to you before the tip-off of yesterday's games. This is a day old now, so these numbers have changed slightly. Not much, but this is a day old. Before yesterday's games tipped off, did you realize that Curry, Wiggins, and Jordan Poole, who are certainly not the big three that you wanted, but they're the big three that you got this year, Golden State Warrior fans, Curry, Wiggins, and Jordan Poole have combined since April Fool's Day for 66.5 points per game. That is the second best trio in the NBA since April Fool's Day. Karl Anthony Towns, Edwards, and D'Angelo Russell, by the way, are number one at 67.2. Williamson, Ingram, and Ball, down with the Pelicans, are third. But there you go. Steph Curry, Andrew Wiggins, Jordan Poole dropping 66.5 per game as a trio, the second best in the NBA. Again, not the big three you ordered off the menu. Came out of the kitchen a little unexpectedly. But they're filling you up.
Yeah, I mean, I find it interesting that they're the top three. I also find it interesting that two of those three are not going to be playoff teams, which tells me that players 4 through 8 matter a hell of a lot more than you think. Because, even with guys doing that, to get to 120 now, which is what you sort of have to do to win a game, you still have to find 54 points from everybody else. And that's the hard part.
Text line says, hey, what if you did the opposite, Damon? What if you took a star player from now and plopped him down in 1998? See, I think it's much easier to do that than to bring a player from then to now. You could take some players from now and put them back then. And the first name that comes to mind is Draymond Green. Draymond Green in 1998 is Pat Riley's favorite basketball player of all time. I mean, Draymond Green in 1998 is in a fight with Rasheed Wallace every other half of basketball. I mean, it would have been beautiful. It would have been intimidating. It would have been nasty. He would have fit 1998 like a glove.
Yeah, until David Stern got the referee's reports.
Yeah. Well, there would be that.
And that's got nothing to do with Draymond Green. It's that game got increasingly rough and difficult the closer you got to the basket. And while Draymond Green could give it out, the number of guys who would be giving it back to him would still take a toll on that body. Because Rasheed Wallace was not just a guy who yelled at referees. He was a hard man.
Oh, yeah.
And, you want to run through a screen that he's setting? Yeah, good luck. Cancel Christmas. And there were a lot of guys like that. I mean, Charles Oakley, Rick Mahorn, go down the list of guys in that era who would knock your face off for a dollar and leave two quarters in your bleeding neck.
Rick Mahorn's fanny would finish third in Defensive Player of the Year voting in the modern NBA.
Oh, it would also be considered a road impediment. You had to basically get a cab to get around him.
You did. You need to call an Uber to get around Rick Mahorn's rear end. Look. Just talking about Draymond being that guy who could go back in time. Look at it this way. You take Draymond and put him back in the gladiator area. I mean, I think he would have done really well against the Lions at the Coliseum. Like, he's just that guy. I'll tell you this, though, about Draymond Green and Steph Curry. I don't know if there's ever going to be a team that has two guys that'll be able to give you this type of formula ever again. It really is so unique what these guys do. It's got to be, Ray, can you think of a more unique 1-2 punch in NBA history with guys who really didn't have duplicatable skills? Curry is obviously the most prolific 3-point shooter in the game's history. His career has changed the trajectory of the league forever, so calling him an influential figure is a total understatement. And he does so by being a gentleman and lovable and darling and mass appeal and 2-time NBA MVP. And, like, there's just so much that he represents. It's staggering what Curry represents just unto himself. Then you start adding him to his teammate. Draymond Green is just the most defense-first, pass-first, shoot-hardly-ever cauldron of, like, unbridled anger mixed with basketball IQ that is rare, that qualifies him to play well in the 90s, like we were just talking about. He is a physical archetype that, in a way, has changed the trajectory of the NBA. Not so much as Curry has done offensively, but Draymond Green is the defensive prototype that every single team is looking for. Do you have a guy that can legit, for real, guard one through five. Now, I think five, Ray, the position of center had to change an awful lot. Like, I don't know if Draymond would have had a lot of success against Hakeem Olajuwon or Patrick Ewing or Shaquille O'Neal. Like, when centers were centers were centers.
Yeah, he'd have gotten moved around.
Right.
And not because of lack of effort. He would have gotten moved around because that was a premium back then.
Right.
If you couldn't move a guy around, you probably didn't get the start as an NBA center back then.
The concept of what a five is had to step itself back to what it is now for Draymond to really be able to guard any center. But he can, and he does. He's got the strength to battle the big. He's got the foot speed to stay in front of the guard. And that's what makes him about as a unique flower to ever pop up in the NBA's garden of talent. And it really is. Like, it's the most unique this guy plus this guy equals this force you got to deal with that you can find. It's a staggeringly unique 1-2 punch.
The one that came to mind for me was Moses Malone and Julius Erving.
Tell me more.
Moses Malone was one of those guys that Draymond Green would never be able to move. And he owned the boards wherever he was. And Julius Erving was the guy who made the game even more vertical than it already was, just because he was not only graceful, but he was quick. He could cover ground with his stride that almost nobody could replicate. And his hands literally were oven mitts. I mean, he could hold a ball like it was a softball. And if you just watch highlights of him and the way that his dunks were literally just more controlled than they were furious, just because his hands were enormous. And so he was a unique, he possessed a unique skill set. And so did Malone, because he was a more mobile yet still, you know, low block first guy. And those skill sets, frankly, they complemented each other, but they rarely touched each other.
Somebody says, you know, you put Draymond Green in 1998, what would have really happened is he'd be getting knocked out consistently. I'll tell you this, you might be right, but would he have stopped coming for a single second? Like, you can knock Draymond down. You could have even knocked him out in 1998. But I promise you, the second the birds are done chirping and flying around his head, he is back in that game at the scorer's table coming for you. Like, yeah, you could have physically done more to deal with Draymond, but that would not have slowed him down.
No, he would have been like the Black Knight in Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Just a flesh wound?
Yeah. Just, you know, all right, we'll call it a draw after he's lost both arms and legs.
Yeah.
But he would have lost both arms and legs because the game was dramatically different then.
It really
was. And I'm not saying it's better, but I'm saying that there was a premium on being strong and tough and ready to throw hands at a moment's notice. And Draymond would have been playing against guys who were bigger and just as mean and were just stronger than him because they were basically hired to be bigger. You know, I mean, it's, you know, I mean, I don't know how best to describe it, except that take Draymond Green, give him 35 pounds and 3 more inches, and you saw that guy a lot.
Yeah, look, it's the NBA now compared to what the NBA was, and I'm not saying, again, not better, just different. The NBA is essentially a slap fight compared to a boxing match. I mean, that's what it really is. This is a slap fight amongst friends now. And back then it was a straight up boxing match. Somebody had to be carried out of this ring for us to say, all right, game over. Like, that's the way it was back then. It was a different sport. I mean, it really was wildly different. And things are just very, very different now. There is no doubt about it. Speaking of physicality being different, Ray, it was a really interesting week of sports. There's an awful lot of things that happened this week that were, you know, worthy of our attention. We put it on it, took it off of it. But, you know, 10 years from now, what are you going to remember about this week? I honestly don't think there was a single thing in sports that I'll remember more this week than that Washington Capitals-New York Rangers game. and all the fights and all of the attention that it got. And I don't know, you tell me if this is wrong for me to say, Ray, but that Rangers-Capitals fight is the best thing to happen to the NHL since they pulled off the cup in the bubble. I mean, it really was the most amount of attention this sport has garnered, and probably even going further back than the bubble. It was, right or wrong, fair or foul, gentlemanly or ungentlemanly, that's the kind of attention hockey is desperate for. I'm glad they got it this week. And what do you know? Putting on the foil, still good for business after all.
Yeah, but they only got it for a day. Because
but that's more than what
the
they normally get.
But
that's more than what they normally it's no days.
Okay.
They got a day.
But if you think that's supposed to linger, I mean, that's the thing. That used to happen a lot more, and it didn't change the way non-hockey fans view hockey. I mean, it was a nice novelty for a night, but if you're asking me what the biggest thing that happened this past week was, it was the rioting at Manchester United. Because that was fans basically saying, we've had enough to the point where this is not about us being fans anymore. Yeah, you've used us for the last time. And the ramifications of that are still going on now, whereas the ramifications from the Rangers-Capitals fight ended when that game ended. And while it was great fun for one night because it's unusual now, you know, 10 years ago, line brawls were not unusual at all, and hockey's been trying to get away from it. And the only reason they got this one is because they screwed up the suspension.
Right. Look, there's nothing I can do to make hockey popular 7 days a week. There's nothing.
Well, you don't try hard enough. No, that's the problem.
There's nothing hockey can do. Gary Bettman doesn't try hard enough, Ray. He can't make it popular 7 days a week.
I'm blaming you, though, because you're here.
Just one day a week, man. Hockey gave me something to talk about this week. Did I talk about it? Yes or no?
Yes, you did. I'm not saying it didn't exist, and I'm not saying it wasn't a nice thing for one day, but hockey is not going to go back to the day where you got a line brawl a week.
No.
And the problem that they have,
it might have a little more attention.
Yeah, well, it got him attention, like I said, for a day, but anything gets attention for a day. To me, the things that linger a while, I mean, like Aaron Rodgers is lingering for a while because, as we said before, it's one of the very rare instances in the history of football where an MVP basically told his employer, get me out of here, to the point where he might not come back and play. That, to me, lingered more. And, yeah, it's an off-field development, but it's a development.
Speaking of lingering for a while, do you really want to die on the that wasn't the Jim Tom Sula fart hill? That's still lingering in my mind.
I'm saying there were 25 people in that room. He has a 4% shot of being the guy. And under normal circumstances, in most rooms where they don't hang the microphones over the gallery, I'd say, yeah, it's pretty clear that the only guy with a microphone, you know, fired it off. But there are, by my count, I think between 8 and 12 microphones that hang literally over the gallery. And you can hear every question pretty clearly, which means that if somebody, you know, had a euphonious moment, that'd get picked up.
Euphonious. Well done. Well done, Ray.
You mock my vocabulary consistently.
No, look, I'm impressed by it consistently. I truly am. 888-957-9570. If you've been impressed by anything that's happened vocabulary-wise or anything else this week, now is your chance to talk about it, or you're going to have to save it until Monday when we come on back. When we do come on back right here, really interesting, really quick story that we don't need to spend much time on because we don't have much time left. Six missing pieces of memorabilia lost into the ether of time. ESPN said, boy, what do you think these would be worth if we could find these? It's kind of an interesting list. We'll share it with you as we tip our cap and say goodbye here on Damon Ratto and Kolsky this Friday afternoon. We're brought to you by Fremont Bank, full service banking, no compromises. And oh, we're also brought to you by Jose Cuervo. Good things come to those who tip. Tip your delivery driver 20% or more. And be one of thousands of lucky people to have Cuervo just cover your tab. Ready to get tipsy? Just tweet your receipt with the hashtag #TipsyForCinco. Jose Cuervo reminds you to drink responsibly. Damon Ratto and Kolsky, 95.7 The Game.
Damon Ratto and Kolsky continues on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome on back. You know, speak his name and he shall appear. Dave Fleming, through no provocation of Ray or eyes, just happened to bring up in conversation Connor Joe. Well, guess who is now a Colorado Rocky? The Rockies have selected the contract of infielder Connor Joe from AAA Albuquerque, baby. So Connor Joe back in the bigs. Our long national nightmare is over, Ray Ratto. Turn your mic on, Ray.
I couldn't make the whole week. Damn it.
I'm glad it happened. Just damn consistency. It's what we're looking for.
Damn it, damn it, damn it. I mean, it means somebody's going to play that stupid song once, and I'm going to have to end the week killing someone.
No, you don't have to do that, unless, of course, they have come up with it in the studio and just want to torture you just for 10 seconds.
I'm just saying, their deaths are in their own hands.
Damon, do you have a Connor Joe alert on Twitter? Whenever his name comes up in any sort of news, that you get a notification?
Like, do I have a bag alert?
Ooh, hold on.
No!
Okay, real quick, what's at stake for the Giants this weekend series brought to you by Harris Ranch Beef? Ooh, we got a sponsor, baby. Let's use that. I'll tell you what's at stake. You got the Padres in town. You're going to be chasing them, or they're going to be chasing you all year long. You want to stay in first place? Go ahead and beat the San Diego Padres. They're a really good team. You got Blake Snell tonight against Anthony DeSclafani. And very interesting pitching matchup, no doubt about it. Joe Musgrove and Gausman tomorrow. Cueto back on Sunday. So there's plenty at stake for the Giants when you're taking on a team that is going to be in your rearview mirror, or you're going to be in theirs all summer long. Brought to you by Harris Ranch Beef. Legendary beef, legendary quality. Shop at harrisranchbeef.com.
Yeah, I mean, San Diego is hanging in because their rotation is as good as it is, and they're giving the Giants all they want to eat on that department, because, you know, Musgrove has been very good, had the no-hitter earlier this year. Blake Snell is still Blake Snell, and though they haven't announced who it's going to be on Sunday, you know, San Diego you don't get a lot of runs off of them.
No.
The reason why they're sort of stalled is because they're not scoring many runs either. They're as much a victim of the depressed April offense as any team in baseball.
No doubt.
Because they should be coming out raking, and they haven't been.
Hey, the last time these two teams met, the Giants came out ahead. You had Kevin Gausman, who was fantastic. Mike Trachman had the Talkman had the 4 RBI in the game, and they ended up losing it. And so, you know, it's just they look at it this way. The San Francisco Giants are 9-6 in their own division, with 5 of those 6 losses being to San Diego already. So you're going to want to improve on that. Rays at the A's. This is an interesting one because Oakland is just painfully average at home with 11 wins. The Rays are a monster on the road. They have 11 wins. They've got as many wins on the road as the A's have at the Coliseum. The A's just want to keep on swinging big bats and pitching it well. Sean Manaea, who's 3-1 with a 3.48, goes against Rich Hill, who, thanks to the Albert Pujols DFA, is now the oldest player in Major League Baseball. The A's got the most home runs in the American League, Ray, with 43. Rays in town. This is an interesting matchup for the A's this weekend.
Yeah, they'd like to see if they can lead their division and eventually have a positive run differential for a change. Because right now, as I'm looking at it, they are essentially 13th in the American League in run differential.
It's not where you want to be.
That's awful.
Not where you want to be.
They win 3-2, they lose 10-5.
God, we were talking run differential just yesterday with our friend Alex Dickerson, who, by the way, Gabe Kapler said that Mike Yastrzemski is active, but Alex Dickerson is going to the injured list. So we'll have to talk to him about that next week. He has
Why didn't he spring that on us yesterday?
Bone bruise in his right shoulder. I don't
who
know.
Who does he work for?
I look at it this way. Hopefully he didn't hurt his shoulder talking to us, like holding up the cell phone. So that is one of the things that we will get into with one of our new favorite conversations, Alec Dickerson, next week. I wanted to wrap up this week with this. ESPN had a story today about 6 missing pieces of memorabilia that, if we could find them, would go like hotcakes, obviously, in the booming memorabilia sports world that we're living in right now. Here they are, Ray. I'm going to go 6 to number 1. Number 6, the ball from Wilt Chamberlain's 100-point game. Somebody thought that they had it. sold it. And then I guess it's been deauthenticated, so they don't know where that is. That would certainly fetch a pretty penny. How about the stolen confession of Shoeless Joe Jackson, which, if you know anything about his court case and his Hall of Fame bid, kept on reappearing and disappearing at baseball's odd convenience, and no one knows where it is now. At number four, how about this one, Ray? This is the one that you'd think that they'd be able to find because they even know where the ball landed. It landed in row D, seat 88, section 302, but nobody knows who has or where is the Kirk Gibson home run ball from game one of the 88 World Series. I can't believe that. It feels like somebody would brag that they'd had that by now, right?
Oh, somebody would have put it on eBay by now. I mean, that just that's a ball that, frankly, lunatic Dodger billionaire fans would kill for.
So the Bobby Thompson shot heard round the world ball from 1951. Nobody knows who has that. Nobody knows where it is. There are people who've been hunting for it for years. In what is definitely, you want to talk about maybe the most significant piece of sports memorabilia of all time, they don't know where Jackie Robinson's jersey from his April 15th, 1947 color line breaking debut. Now, just another Jackie jersey from that year was sold for $2 million. Could you imagine if you actually had the jersey that broke the color barrier as Jackie wore it that day? That would be second to none. But definitely not the most expensive to obtain, should you be able to find it. The most expensive sports memorabilia, according to this list, Ray, the two golf balls that Alan Shepard hit while he was walking on the surface of the moon. If anyone could go get those golf balls, you could sell them each for like $10 million.
I don't know what the memorabilia market is on other planets, so that might be negotiable. But yeah, that would be a keeper.
Technically, it's just a celestial body, Ray. It's not a planet. Come on, get it right. At the
end. But nobody lives on the moon, but aliens might have popped by.
Could be right. Thanks so much to Brian Windhorst, Dave Fleming, and Steve Kerr all joining us today. Ray, thank you. An awful lot of fun this week. Again, congratulations to the Kolskis on their brand new bundle of joy. Lucas and Nash, great stuff. Good to be back in studio all week long. Stay tuned because Nick Friedell and Whitey are coming up next to wrap up your week in fine fashion here on 95.7 The Game. In the meantime, it was great hanging out with you. We'll be back on Monday. And please do remember that sports don't build character, they reveal it.
And like that, he's gone.
Ladies and gentlemen, the weekend.